This free resource is from the 2013 Spiritual Leadership Conference in Lancaster, California, hosted by Pastor Paul Chapel in the Lancaster Baptist Church. This lesson is entitled Ministry Administration 101 with Dr. Tom Shepherd. Dr. Shepherd recently joined the staff of Lancaster Baptist Church. He has experienced a wide breadth of management and executive experience over the past 40 years, including success in areas of medical education and hospital and college administration. Upon retirement, he joined the staff of Lancaster Baptist Church as Ministry Operations Administrator.
My name is Tom Shepherd. I spent almost 40 years in secular work. I was saved when I was 27. My wife and I raised 8 children, and once I was saved, we got into church and never looked back. Soul winning, active in the church, been a deacon in a couple of churches or whatever, supporting the pastor and supporting the local work. On the secular side, I was CEO of my first hospital. I was 26 years old. I was CEO of 5 different hospitals. And then I had started my own hospital management company. And during that time, I went back to the Medical University of South Carolina, got my doctorate, and I got into higher education. I was the president of a college in Seattle, Washington, and then I was there for 4 years, and then for 7 years, I was with DeVry Incorporated. You might have heard of DeVry University. DeVry Incorporated is a New York Stock Exchange company. I was executive vice president of that. And I was president of Ross University, which are a medical school and a veterinary school in the Caribbean that DeVry had purchased in 2003. I moved there in 2004 and worked to build up that institution. Then I retired, or semi-retired maybe, until I came here and dropped my last 2 girls off at college at West Coast. And then I ran into Pastor Chapel, and he asked me what I was doing. And I should have said something else other than semi-retired, but he needed some assistance in administration, and not assistance that he didn't know, because he's a very gifted administrator. But you know, with the size of the ministry and with the college and the high school and everything going on, he asked if I could help him take some of the burden. And so after about a 3-month process of praying and meeting, we felt this was the Lord's leading, so I moved from the Gulf of Mexico to the Gulf of whatever this is out here. just the Gulf. Well, my wife and I went to Google Maps and tried to find a lake or something. There's nothing. So we live in West Palmdale, but it's a pleasure to be here. What I want to do today is give you just some practical things. As I spent about 35 years as a layman in church, I have seen pastors, assistant pastors, staff work in churches, and some were masterful leaders, and some never had administration in Bible college and really were searching, and I was able to actually help some pastors along the way in that regard. So what I want to do is help you today, give you a vantage point of a layman who's been in business, and how I can hopefully help you in your ministry with administration. And we'll get in the Bible in just a second, but I just want to start off with this topic, which I think is, you probably look at that and say, well, that's an interesting topic. But, you know, when people come into your church, do they know what you're doing, and do they know where you're going? Yeah, you're going to be soul winning. Yes, you're going to do outreach, but where's the church going? What's your plan? What do you have involved? Particularly if you're a church plant and you're starting from ground zero, or you come into a church that has a heritage and a history, what are you doing and where are you going? Now, it may from the outside appear, hey, things are going well and we're doing fine, but do you in your own heart know what you're doing and where you're going? Are you just a reactionary ministry to what's happening in your lives? And so what we're going to be talking about today is planning. And one of the key phrases here is, if you fail to plan, then you plan to fail. If you fail to plan, then you plan to fail. I picked up a good quote here this week. It says, the trouble with not having a goal is you run up and down the field and never score. And can you imagine that? You're out, you're doing the work, you got visitation programs, you got nursery, new nursery set up, and you're doing all this stuff, and you're walking around, but you never really know whether you've scored or not, whether you're getting ahead or whether you're just going through the process. So what I want to do is look at Luke chapter 14. If you have your Bibles, I just want to look there real quickly and read a couple of, hope that's not my phone. Luke chapter 14 and verse 28, very familiar scripture for you, but I just want to take a look at that real quick. Luke 14, 28. For which of you, intending to build a tower, sitteth not down first and counteth the cost, whether he have sufficient to finish it? Lest haply, after he had laid the foundation and is not able to finish it, all that behold it begin to mock him, saying, this man began to build, but was not able to finish. And that's what we want to do, is have a local New Testament church that is able to thrive, that is able to build, and able to do something for Christ. Let's pray. Lord, thank you for the few minutes we have here together. And Lord, the folks here in this room are interested in how to get ahead and do things for you that bring honor and glory to the name of Jesus Christ. And so, Lord, I hope that the words here that I speak today, the question and answers at the end, anything that I say or do, Lord, will be directed by you and will be a help. Give me the words to say this afternoon. In Jesus' name I pray. Amen. Okay, well, first of all, we're going to look at two aspects of planning. And I haven't gone through this PowerPoint yet exactly how to have it laid out, so give me a little time here. But there's two kinds of planning. There's a long-term plan, there's 3 to 5 years, and there's a short-term plan, and that's an annual plan. And we're going to go through both of these, give you some nuts and bolts very quickly, and I'll have some, hopefully some time at the end for some question and answers. But what is a long-term plan? Well, a long-term plan, it's like you say you got an elephant that's standing there in the room, and you say, okay, our long-term plan is we want to eat this elephant. Okay, he's dead already, all right? But we want to eat this elephant. And you sit there and you go, there is no way I'm going to be able to eat this elephant. But then you break it down to your short-term plan, and you just eat it one bite at a time. And if you make sure you're consistent and you're taking a bite at a time, eventually your long-term plan comes to fruition. You eat the elephant. And so we're going to look at both aspects of this and how these can come together. So first is long-term planning, and this is called the what. You're doing a long-term plan. What is it that this ministry is supposed to do? Where are we supposed to go? What do we want to look like? And so that is what I call the what. And there's a couple aspects of this. And one is the vision. What do you want to be in the future? And for your blank there, I think it's mission. I just had them reversed. But the vision. What is this ministry going to look like in the future? How is it going to end up? And the second is the mission. That's your fundamental purpose for being where you are. Now, I used to turn around a lot of hospitals. That was part of my job with my hospital management company I started. And we go in and hospitals were in trouble. And one of the things I found in just about every place I've been is they didn't know what their mission was. So here you are, you're a hospital and you're set up and you're trying to take care of the healthcare needs of the community, and you try to do everything for everybody, and you're a mile wide and an inch deep. You're really not quality anywhere. You're not concentrating anything. You're just trying to do everything for everybody. A lot of times that happens in ministries as well. You try to reach out and you got this community and you're just trying to do everything for everybody, and you're really not doing anything well. So what is your mission? What are you here for? I was at a church plant one time, and as we were having the meetings to get this church started, before we even had our first meeting, the pastor was talking at one of the meetings about, well, we got to start an RU program on Friday night, and we got to do, and he had all these programs lined up that he wanted to do, and we hadn't had our first meeting yet. We had no core charter membership. And so I got him aside and said, look, let's just concentrate, as Pastor Chappell says, the main thing is the main thing. Let's just concentrate on knocking on doors, getting people in the church, and let's get the ministry established first. That was our mission. The mission of West Coast Baptist College is training laborers for his harvest. That's a great mission statement. That's what the college is there for. We're not going to get into offering MD degrees. I have a background in had to offer an MD degree, but we're not going to get into that because does that train laborers for the heart? No. We want to train people who know the Bible and can go out and preach the word and get people saved. If there's a gas station down the street making a lot of money and boy, somebody will give it to us, are we going to run a gas station? Is it true to our mission? It's not. So the first thing is to find out your mission, and then you go about building what your vision is going to be. So the first part of this is what we call a SWOT analysis, S-W-O-T, a SWOT analysis. And this is a very fundamental thing. You can do it yourself. If you have a staff, you can get your staff together. If you have a good group of deacons, you can work with your deacons. I don't know what your particular place is. But it's good to get other input besides just yourself. But sometimes you're in a position where it's just you. And if it's just you, get alone with God, spend some time, and go through this SWOT analysis in a very thoughtful way. And I'm going to show you how you do that in a minute. But I want to be very clear about one thing. As we're talking about the ministry, as we're talking about planning, and things I've done in secular work for many years, don't outstep God. Make sure God's in it. Don't get ahead of him. Don't not seek his face and his voice. Every time I had made a job change or a career change, I spent a lot of time in prayer. God, you tell me what you want me to do. And by the way, that's what your members of your church or your ministry are saying. What do you want me to do? Just tell me. I'd be glad to be a servant leader on your team, but tell me what you want me to do. And first, you need to get alone with God and say, God, what do you want us to do as a team here? So let's go through the SWOT. The first of those is called strengths. That's the S in SWOT. And strengths is an internal measurement. You're looking internally at your organization and what you're trying to do. What are your core competencies? What are the unique strengths or resources that you have that are your strengths? This could be a number of things. It could be your campus is on a highway. I was with a church planner yesterday at the luncheon, and he has a little location, has 22,000 cars go by every day. What a great location. People are going to see it. They're visible. That would be a strength. Maybe a strength is the staff that you have. If you have some staff and they have some particular interests in some things, or maybe you have people who are members of your church that can do some things for you that you couldn't ordinarily have. Maybe it's your heritage of your church. Maybe it has a great heritage. We're going to go to weaknesses in a minute. Maybe your heritage is a weakness, too. You never know. It could go both ways. But maybe it is that there's no independent fundamental Baptist church in your whole area. That would be a strength. So you find out what are the core competencies that you have that bring strength to the ministry. Second is the W is weaknesses. Now, again, this is an internal measurement. And what we're doing here is we're saying, let's look at ourselves and where are we weak? Where are some areas we need to look at? Where are areas that we struggle to perform? Where do we have less talent or resources to offer? Maybe, again, it is your location. Maybe you have a location that you can't grow anymore. You are landlocked. You have no more room for parking. Visitors are coming in and turned away because there's no space. Maybe that's a weakness that you have. Maybe you lack a discipleship program. You're going out and people are getting saved, but they never get baptized. They never show up and attend the church because there's no way of discipling them or no work there. Maybe there's no planning. Maybe you haven't gone through the planning like we're doing today. But through the weaknesses, be honest. Be honest with yourself. Look at your ministry and say, hey, Lord, where are we weak? Where do we need to work? What are some things that we need to work on? Because that's going to be key to developing your long-term plan. The O is opportunities. Now we move from the internal to the external. These are external measurements that you're looking at. You're looking at favorable trends that are out there, areas that you can take advantage of in order to increase your ministry. It could be, for instance, you've got a new subdivision that's going up right near the church, and boy, what a great place to start door knocking and have an impact. Maybe there's a new plant opening in your town, and so employment's going to be there and some other things. Maybe you're in a conservative area like Lancaster where you have a mayor who you can work with to on programs maybe in the public schools or in other areas or in the parks. things, look at those opportunities and look at it externally. What do we have out here that we could do? You know, missionaries will go to a mission field and they'll say, boy, this is where my heart is. Now they need to look at, okay, what are the opportunities I have here? What can I do to enhance Jesus Christ in this area? So those would be an external measurement for opportunities. And then the T is threats. And boy, I don't think there's any number of threats that we have in our environment today. This is an external measurement. This is looking at unfavorable trends. This is looking at some of the weaknesses you have that could become major threats in the future. For instance, if you're in that area and you're landlocked and you can't grow anymore, and that's a weakness, and you know, 3 years from now, somebody else sets up another church 4 blocks away and a big edifice and a lot of parking, a lot of space, that would become a major threat. And by the way, not an independent fundamental church, just a church. People are going to start bypassing you because there's no room. So you need to look at those weaknesses and look at the threats as well and see what do you need to do, where are some areas you need to shore up. It could be, for instance, you're in an industrial area. Nobody drives by on Sundays. There's nobody working, and so you're in an industrial area. It could be finances. Finances could become a real threat to your ministry. A lot of ministries have been lost. They're too much on the mortgage. As you know, Pastor Chapel came here. The building was in foreclosure, and those things could be a real threat to you. It also could be a lack of vision. You know, if you don't have a vision for where this ministry is going, that's a weakness that could become a threat in the future. I was a member of one church. We were going to build a new building and move. No, we're not going to build a new building and move. Oh, well, let's build a new building and move. Oh, no, let's not build a new. Oh, there's a piece of land available over here. And the people were torn to and fro because there was no vision. It was like we're just going to react to whatever's out there, and that's what we're going to do instead of saying, God, what do you want us to do as a people, and following that. So you go through the SWOT analysis: strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats. Then what you do is you prioritize these areas. You prioritize each SWOT category. So you prioritize your strengths from your strongest strength to your less strongest strength, and your weaknesses, and you start prioritizing each of these four categories so that you have a list of those things that you, if it's a weakness, you must take care of these. And then you get down to the weaknesses. Well, that's okay, but we'll worry about that sometime in the future. And you go through each of those and kind of label those out. Now, by the way, don't forget the strengths. As you're going through this, and I've seen it time and time again, people will concentrate on the threats. Oh, our weaknesses, we got to shore these things up, and they forget what makes them strong. You know, if your strength is a strong soul-winning program and your weakness is finances, and you get over here and start dealing in finances and you do all this and you turn around and nobody's going out soul-winning, your finances are going to get worse. Yeah, so right. Make sure you continue to concentrate on your strengths, and your long-range plan takes your strengths and says we're going to continue to enhance whatever it is that we find that is good for us. And then the second thing you do is you prioritize initiatives. So with each of the SWOT pieces that you pulled together, you have initiatives under each one. Let's say one of your strengths, one of your weaknesses is I don't have a staff member to help me with X. And so an initiative would be within the next fiscal year or in the next 3 years, I need to bring on a staff member to help in the music, or to help in with the youth, or to help in this area. So you start to develop initiatives under each one and be free thinking. Hey, what can I do? I've got this weakness here and I don't know what to do. So just start penning things out. Or if you're in a group of people, if you have deacons or a staff and you have an offsite meeting, you initiate the discussion and you play, bad word in a church, but devil's advocate. You know, you challenge people. If you're doing it yourself, challenge yourself. If I'm going to look out 5 years and I'm going to dream of a city on a hill, how do I get there? What are the initiatives? What are the steps I need to take? Now, Pastor Chappell did not develop a long-range plan when he came here to Lancaster. But one of his initiatives would have been, had he done that, I'm going to knock on 500 doors a week for 16 months. There's an initiative for you. And you know what he would do? He would have come back each week and said, "Oop, I'm at 497. Honey, I'll be home for dinner, but I got three more doors to knock on." You look at your initiatives and make sure you're carrying those out when you develop, and I haven't gotten into it yet, but an annual plan, and we'll get to that in just a minute. Then you start to develop your strategy. You have the SWOT all prioritized. You have initiatives. Those are prioritized. And now you develop an overall strategy. Let me change my page here. Then you develop an overall strategy. And what you look at here is, where are you going to be in 5 years? Where would you like to be? Where do you think God is leading this church? This doesn't have to be something you publicize and have in your church bulletin, but it's something to internalize and keep on the long-term goal. You know, as I'm eating the leg of this elephant, I want to eventually eat this whole elephant. And in 5 years, I want to have it done. So you keep chewing away at the pieces here, but you realize there's a long-term plan, a vision that you have that you want to get to in 5 years. Review your major categories: ministry expansion, staff additions, facility additions or improvements, capital expenditures, major events. Review those types of things, because there are probably some big nuggets there that are going to take a while to capture. But you have a long-term vision, and you know what you want to do to get there. And then you break these things down by year, and then provide annual updates. So what do I mean by annual updates? That means that every year you update your five-year plan. So you always have, you're looking at that next 5 years out, and then you finish this year here, and you look at the next 5 years out, and you keep looking ahead. Things are going to change. Things are going to happen. And so your plans aren't going to happen just as you want them to, but you keep planning and looking ahead on your long-term plan. And I would actually keep this document, let's say you do it with your deacons, I'd keep it confidential with your deacons. I wouldn't tell the churches around the area, here's what we're going to do, or make it a big play. In fact, in hospitals, I used to number our strategic plans, and I knew exactly who had them and where they were. Except the Obama administration probably has all of them now, I understand. But we tried to keep those things confidential because we wanted to make sure that this was internalized for ourselves, and this is something we're working on, and this is something we're going to be accomplishing. So then we come to that piece of it, the long-range plan, 5 years out. We look at some annual things that we want to do, the big nuggets that we want to approach. We know where we want to go in the next 5 years. Now we look at the annual planning, and this is called the when. This is the when. This is where you come down to where you strategize and lay out exactly what we're going to do for this year. You got your long-range plan, and if you're the pastor, you're the one who has to keep your eye on that long-range plan, but as you get down and break it down in the pieces for this next year, this is where there's accountability. This is where you've got to look at what you're going to accomplish. So let's look at the annual plan. First, you provide an official unified ministry calendar of events. You lay out what you're going to do this next year. You put out on January 1st, you put out a calendar of, here's when our missions conference is, here's when our VBS is, here's when we're having revival, here's where we're doing this or doing. You lay everything out for everybody for the next year. Now, you don't do that on December 31st, just before the vision night, and you're there typing away, getting your calendar. Pastor Chappell, as he announced this morning, is starting. He's already got the theme for next year, and we're going to be laying out the calendar and sharing that with the staff in August. You should be working now on your 2014 plans, because that's the only way it's going to get done. If you just lay out some things and say, hey, we're just going to do this and do this, people are going to know that you haven't spent the time, the effort, or listening to God to lay out these plans. You're just going to do the same old, same old. And if you're going to start eating at this elephant, and you're going to start with that right leg, You got to start chewing, and this is the way you do it, is through the annual plan that you share with the church. I'm going to knock. Maybe we as a church are going to knock on 500 doors a week. Maybe you have a few people, and this is our goal. And then you hold everyone accountable to that. So let's see. I got a little bit ahead of myself here. The long-term plans lead into the action items that we're just discussing here. And one way you do that is you meet off-site if possible. You know what happens when you're in the office and the phone rings and the garbage truck pulls up and the garbage isn't out and, you know, just all the things that happen. This is so important. You want to get off-site. You want to get away. If you have a staff, get a hotel for a night. If you're going with your deacons on a retreat, you need to just get away. And get away from the everyday, because this is so critical for the planning, for your ministry, for the future, that you want to get away. You download long-term plans to action items. You download those long-term plans into actionable items that you can look at. I have up on the screen, measurement leads to accountability. And that is a key. You have to have measurable goals. So you can look and say, did we do it or did we not do it? It's February. We said we were going to knock on 500 doors a week, and we're coming short. Ladies and gentlemen, we're not meeting our annual plan. We've got to step up. And then how do you do to maximize that? You've got to hold yourself accountable. Because you see, if you're going to eat that big elephant, for those of you who came in late, I'm sorry, we're eating an elephant in here. But if your long-range plan is to eat that elephant, and you got one toenail done, and I don't know how big an elephant's toenail is, it might be pretty big, but that's all you have done, and it's June of the first year, you only got 4.5 years left, well, that long-range plan is for naught. So you have accountable, manageable items that you can do on your annual plan in order to keep moving forward. You want to be up to the elbow. I assume an elephant has an elbow. You want to be up to that elbow by March of that year and up to the shoulder by October of that year. You have measurable goals so you know exactly what you want to do and hold yourself accountable. And then you provide each ministry in a separate section. You break it down so each ministry is in a separate section. You want to have measurable goals, not just ministry-wide, but for each ministry as well. If you have a lot of young couples coming in, the nursery is very important. If you have youth groups, very important that you strategize and plan how you're going to build up the next generation and help those parents. You divide it up in whatever ministries you have within your church, you divide it up by those ministries. And then you lay out each section for review. Each of these separate areas, you lay those out for individual review. And I have some notes here of how you can do that. And, you know, you can use your own imagination or way you want to do it, but you can, the way we're doing it here at Lancaster, for instance, we have a prior year review. What happened last year? How did we do in each of these ministries broken down? What happened? Did we meet our goals? Are we behind? Are we ahead? How are we doing? Secondly, we lay out a 12-month calendar, what we're going to do this next year, and a month-by-month project list. Where are we going? How are we doing? And laying that out as we go forward. And then we have detailed initiation through completion dates. So, for instance, for the Spiritual Leadership Conference, there were detailed instructions starting in January, in fact, last fall, of what people were supposed to be doing coming up to this date. And it all backtracked through. So when I would come into work on a Monday morning in March, I'd have on my calendar, need to order balloons. I don't know if the balloons are still out there, but need to order balloons and need to make sure we have the tents are cleaned and ready for the thing. The next Monday, I have certain things. And everybody has on their calendars the different items that they're responsible for. So you don't do what a lot of us have done in our lives, and that is you're coming up to the week before, and there's a mad scramble. Do we have any tents? Did anybody get coffee cups? Did we get this? It's all planned out. You break it down, fine-tune it to that, to where when it comes up, you can enjoy the conference as well as the people who are coming to enjoy it as well. You can enjoy VBS, as much as those kids and those families are being reached and touched. You can enjoy the revival as much as others because you've laid out that plan and stretched it back far enough that you got all the work done on your annual plan. On your annual plan. Then you also have to have a budget. And that's obviously critical too, because some areas you're going to go over budget and some under budget, but at least lay out a budget for yourself that you can hold yourself accountable to. And then an area that is very important is a personal life section. So if you have a couple of staff or it's just you, you fill out this personal life section of what do I want to do this year. I'm going to read my Bible through once, or I'm going to read 3, 5, 7, 10, 15 books. Might even do some work and lay out the books that you are going to read. You're going to go to 2 conferences. I'm going to have my staff go to a conference. And then actually put not just a conference, but what am I going to do? What do I want to get out of that conference? You lay out your personal goals. I'm going to date my wife once a week. I'm going to make sure every Saturday afternoon I'm with the kids. Make sure you get those personal goals down, because you need a balance in your life. And if you don't have that balance in your life, it's going to impact your wife, it's going to impact your kids, and it will be detrimental to everything you're trying to do for the cause of Christ. So make sure you spend some time in that personal life section as well. And like I said, management or measurement leads to accountability. That is very important, that you have these things measurable and you hold yourself accountable to get those things completed. Now I want to step off the planning platform just for a second and get to just one other aspect of administration. I obviously could cover a lot of stuff, you know, dry stuff like budgeting and signing leases and all those kinds of things. And by the way, I have my business cards in the back. And if you have any questions, you can certainly email me or call me. I am readily available to assist you with long-range planning, short-range planning, or what I'm going to talk about now, and probably one of the most important aspects of the ministry, and that is staff. Whether it's yourself as a pastor and you're by yourself, or you have a staff of people working with you, this is the important ingredient, because I don't care. When I used to run hospitals, I used to tell the folks, you could have the most beautiful edifice, glass, and all clean, and everybody said, man, this place is great. And if you don't have good people, nobody's going to come to your hospital. And it's the same with the ministry. If you take care of those personal items on your annual plan, and you are enriching yourself, and you're staying true to the word, and your staff has servant leadership mentality. I've only been here since January, but I can tell you this staff here at Lancaster Baptist Church is remarkable. They are going out of their way. I think one of the telling things for me, because I'm new, I can say this. I won't say this next year. But one of the telling things to me was when I think Pastor Chappell said last night that the college isn't even here. You know, there's 1,000 people that would be helping you and getting everything. These are the people of this church doing this, the volunteers. People have taken their vacations so they can help you during this week. And the staff helps generate that because they're doing that as well. And so it's a wonderful opportunity. But a couple things here with your staff. One are annual reviews. You need to do annual reviews. I was telling someone just earlier that I knew a pastor one time, a friend of mine actually, and he served at a church for 7 years, and he never got a raise, never got a review. He just served. I mean, nobody ever said, hey, you got to give the pastor a raise. Hey, we got to do something for the pastor. He just kind of served, and the people just took it for granted. But if you start setting up a system of annual reviews, that forces the issue. And I'm not saying do this for money. I'm saying do this for enrichment. In other words, if you're alone on the staff, you ought to say to your deacons, folks, I want an honest assessment of how I can better serve you. Not what are my strengths and weaknesses, because that gets into a thing, but you say, how can I better serve you this year, next year? And set up some language and some, maybe even some discussion points that they can help you to see through their discussions, or maybe through their writing, if you want to do it in writing, what are your weaknesses and what are some areas that you are not meeting the needs of the church from an aspect that you don't have because you're the pastor. And then if you have a staff and you have people that are working with you, you not only do annual reviews on your staff, but you ask for 360 feedback. That is that you are evaluating them and their job, and you also have your staff let you know, what can I do to be a better mentor to you? How can I better serve you? Am I open? Do I communicate well? Do I respond to you on a timely basis? What can I do to help you? And that's a good way to get that feedback from below and from above. 360 feedback is going to strengthen you and help you with your staff. And then with the annual reviews, how do we do this? Well, we do it through a couple of ways. This is with the F is staff, by the way, and annual reviews. You do the 360 feedback, and that wasn't laid out well, so I'll tell you what that says. It says, what went well? As you're doing an evaluation on staff, you go over what went well. Everybody likes to hear, hey, you did this great, and you did that great. Everybody wants to hear that. But this is a great time to sit down and actually accentuate that with your staff. I am so glad you're here. I enjoy working with you, and you do this and you do that. You have just really helped me. But then you get to what could have gone better. Where are some areas that you could help me? Hey staff, you know, I had this plan and we were going to do it, and an hour before it was due, I told you last week, you told me it wasn't done. Give me that feedback sooner, or be more organized, or whatever the thing is that you're trying to get across to your staff. Because if you ignore it, it's just going to continue until a point where you're going to get upset and say, what is this guy? I don't need this guy around here. Why don't you deal with these things? Be a mentor. Be someone who's going to challenge someone and help them to grow into a staff member and someone who could really help you. And then put it on a numerical scale. You want these things on a scale that says, you know, from 1 to 10, you're a what? I've seen too many evaluations where it's just wordy and flowy and a lot of flowers and stuff and kudos going out. And you don't actually get down to say, look, you're an 8 now, which means, man, you're great and you're serving this ministry and you're doing well, but you know what? I challenge you to be a 9 next year. And here's what I'm going to do to help you. I'm going to send you to a conference on servant leadership, for instance, or whatever. I want you to read these 3 books. I read them last year. I want you to read these books. Give them some ideas of what they could do, but put them on a numerical scale. You may, for instance, have a staff member who's a 3. And things aren't going well. So at least you have an honest evaluation and you say, look, I need to get you up to a 5 next year, or we need to talk about this. But it's an honest, open communication that you're able to have with your staff. And force the tough subjects. You got to force those tough subjects. Otherwise, you're just going to live with it. You're going to have anxiety. They're going to have anxiety. And it's going to end up not in a good result. So make sure you share those things. So I hope I've helped you a little bit. 2 quick areas of administration, but 2 areas I think that we lack a lot is our human resources with our people that we're working with, and with planning for where we want to go and our annual plans as well.